Welcome to the Placebo Magic Podcast, the podcast about theatrical spiritual practice for atheists. I'm your host, Durmok, the wizard and peasant lord of this vast 10-acre realm of Hobdur, also known as Farm Code Gary, also known as Garrison Benson.
Greetings, placebo mages. Today, managing your sense of identity. But first, thank you to our newest Patreon backer, Amy. And thank you to our patrons at the producer level or above, Alkanet, Emily, Redrum, Soda Pop, A Sociology of Tarot, Annie, Ash, Brianne, Carrie, Dev, Vanka, Yoon, The Turkey Whisperer, Tony, Valerie, Winter, and Zoe. All right, so today I'm recording with my windows open. It's really hot here in northern Michigan today, at least by our standards, meaning it's like 80 degrees Fahrenheit. And so I left the windows open, and I'm hoping that doesn't mess up the audio too much. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, today I want to talk about this idea of identity and kind of how to manage identity. This is a topic that I've been wanting to address for a long time, and I have been putting it off because I didn't feel like I had a clear and concise enough way to talk about it. And I think I maybe have sort of finally cracked the code. Not that it's a perfect framework, but at least something that is good enough to be helpful. Where, you know, there's so many complications that come with identity, and it's difficult to sort of reconcile all the different pieces of insight and knowledge that I've accumulated about this in terms of there's advice that oftentimes seems to contradict other advice, you know. So I was trying to find a way to reconcile those in kind of a dialectical fashion. And I think that I've kind of gotten somewhere that's at least good enough to be, you know, helpful and memorable. So well, let's talk a little bit about what those conflicting kind of priorities are when it comes to identity. So first of all, you've got this kind of concept that identity tends to be a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. So if you hold negative beliefs about yourself, then those negative beliefs tend to act those out like more than you would if you didn't believe that about yourself. So for instance, if you believe that you're not good at art, then you're not going to be good at art because you're not going to put any effort into it, or, you know, you don't, it's like you don't believe that it's an activity worth pursuing because you think that it's like something that's hardwired into yourself. It's like a fixed trait rather than something that you could build through practice, which is actually the case. You know, you may not come as naturally to you as it comes to somebody else, but chances are the person that you're comparing yourself to put a lot more practice into it than you have, and not just, you know, innate talent. So that's one aspect, and that's not just a matter of like what we would consider to be skills or talents. It also goes to kind of behavioral things, like you think that you're just an impatient person by nature, or you think that you're not capable of establishing good habits, or you think that you're not capable of being in a healthy relationship, or, you know, there's lots of different possibilities. But I think the general issue with this is that there's a lot of these kinds of beliefs where having that belief makes you put less effort into developing yourself in that way. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because you have this low self-efficacy around that particular trait. Now, on the other hand, you know, holding positive beliefs about yourself, it can be really, really beneficial in that it can become this kind of autopilot where if you believe that you're capable, then you will, you know, put effort in, and you'll be optimistic about, you know, endeavors that you can do, and you'll just have a, you know, higher sense of willpower and motivation to develop yourself. However, you know, having too high of beliefs about yourself can blind you to your own flaws and also just blind you to potential obstacles and pitfalls that then you get yourself into the situation where your beliefs about yourself are clashing with reality, and you don't want to acknowledge their reality. So for instance, you may start to avoid things that remind you of your failure, or that things that don't seem like they fit your identity. So if you've, you know, done something to hurt somebody in such a way that is totally outside of your beliefs about yourself, then you may kind of, rather than own up to it and try to reconcile or apologize or whatever, you may just kind of pretend that it didn't happen, because it doesn't reinforce your, you know, your beliefs about yourself. So it's not as if you can just hug one of these extremes and say, oh, I'm going to hold low opinion about myself, and then I'll be like super humble or something, or I'm going to have a really high opinion of myself, and then I'm going to just, you know, ride on this autopilot of I'm going to act out those beliefs. It's not that simple. And speaking of humility, by the way, I think that's, you know, that's something that is another piece of this puzzle where I don't think that just having a low opinion of yourself is the same thing as humility. I think humility is a little more nuanced and complex than that, especially when you kind of factor in the fact that having a low opinion of yourself tends to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like if humility is a virtue, and, you know, being good and kind and disciplined and all these things are virtues, then I'd like to think that virtues are all kind of mutually compatible pretty much. And if, you know, I guess that would suggest that that's not what humility is. It's just thinking you're a piece of junk. I think it's something a little more nuanced than that. And so how I've started to think about identity, which I think is like a way of kind of simplifying the issue, is that it's just to think of it as, rather than say to yourself, I am this or I am not that, instead reframe it as I can be this or I can be that. And that goes both ways in terms of positive and negative kind of associations, or positive and negative identities. So rather than say, you know, I am a good person, say, I can be a good person. I have the capability of being a good person. Rather than say, I'm a terrible person, say, I have the capability of being a terrible person. Or, you know, you want to hold both of those possibilities simultaneously. And that's going to give you, you know, the self-efficacy to be able to know, like, oh, it's, if I put effort into improving myself or effort into solving my problems, that is actually going to be worthwhile. And, you know, you can use that to open up the pathways to motivation and say, like, this is something that's actually worth investing energy into. On the other hand, you also have that, I know I have the capability of being a jerk. I know I have the capability of being, you know, incredibly like lazy and you know, whatever thing you don't want to be, to know that you have the potential to be that, and to know, like, what, not just that you have the potential, but to know, like, what are the circumstances that would push you down that path? You know, what are the risk factors that would make you have, like, ethical slippage in your workplace or in your relationship? And what can you do to, like, anticipate those and deal with the problem before it starts, you know? Because if you have this belief that, like, oh, I'm a perfectly faithful spouse, I would never, you know, do anything unfaithful, then that may, like, create a blind spot for you. Or if you think, like, I'm a incredibly, you know, kind and accepting person, that might create a blind spot for you, where you're not willing to sort of see the possibilities of your being, you know, judgmental or whatnot. So I think that's, you know, just to boil it down, I think that's just a really simple way to do it, is say, rather than say I am or I am not or I cannot, say I could be this, I could be that, I can do this, I can do that, and just acknowledge the potentialities. Another way of thinking about this is through, like, the Buddhist concept of detachment, where you know, identity is not something that you should just not have and not use. And I don't think it's really possible to just not have an identity. I think that with this, you know, idea of detachment in this sense, it's not that you don't, you know, engage in self-reflection and don't you know, use labels on yourself at all. It's just that you kind of use them more loosely, and you don't get so fixated on any one kind of set of labels. You understand that these things are kind of fluid and flexible, and that that they're provisionally useful, but they have limits in terms of, like, you know, you can get yourself stuck by clinging too strongly to an identity. And I think a lot of our sources of suffering oftentimes come back to this, where it's like we suffer, which is, you know, again, I'm kind of sticking with a little bit of a Buddhist outlook on this to some extent, at least. You know, we suffer, which is inevitable. That's just, you know, stuff happens. That's life. But then a lot of times we then sort of cling to that suffering as part of our identity. We make that a part of our sense of self, and we won't let it go. And that can come down. That can be all kinds of different types of suffering that we do that with, whether it's, you know, injustice and oppression, where our victimhood becomes a core part of our identity. And it can also be something more individual, like a certain health issue that you experienced, or a mental health issue that you've experienced, or a relationship that failed, or someone who passed away, or anything like that. That it can, you know, stuff happens and it sucks. But if you make your sort of suffering or your victimhood a part of your identity, then that can become a big negative, because it's at that point your happiness is competing with your sense of sort of validation and belonging. I do think that those kind of identities, there's a way to turn it into a positive, which is when that identity connects you with other people who can form a support network, and who can, in the case of, like, you know, systemic injustice and oppression, people who can form like a coalition of power by kind of uniting through that type of suffering. But that's a whole different, even though you may be using that identity of, oh, we're like sufferers, it's different in that you're focusing on the power that you can gain from that coalition, rather than focusing on the lack of power of just being a victim. And so it's a subtle distinction, but I think when you're like, you know, trying to join like a support group or something on the internet, for instance, like I remember a while back I joined this support group for like a particular issue on Reddit, and it was not a supportive environment at all. It turned out that it was mostly just people kind of bemoaning their lack of power to change anything, and sort of telling each other, well, it's always going to be bad, nothing's going to change. And so you know, it's like you want to be conscious of the distinction there between like using an identity like that to connect you to a community that's going to actually be like a support network, or whether it's more like lobsters in a bucket that are just like, you know, you're not allowed to be happy because we're all like identifying with this type of suffering together. So I think that, you know, one great way to think about this is that identity is something that you, rather than something that you are, it's something that you wear, like clothing, and that you can don different identities on different days or in different circumstances, depending on what's appropriate for the circumstance. Not that you're being disingenuous, but this, you understand that identity is something that you can deploy as a tool that helps to kind of steer your brain in ways that are a little more helpful. So you can have these sort of subtle distinctions between, you know, the sort of like fitness version of you that's all like, oh, I'm going to get jacked. And you can have another version of you that's like acknowledging the fact that you might be a little bit, you know, addicted to the couch or whatever. And those can both be identities that are deployed in service of your health, but they're used in somewhat different ways. One of them is used to say, hey, yes, I do have the power to change this. And the other one is saying, yes, I do have the potential to be drawn into this, like, you know, bad habit of sitting for too many hours a day. And I think the key is that you're just not fixed on one of those. You're not just like clinging really hard to one of them. And you can kind of engage with the spirit of play and say, like, I'm going to wear this costume. I'm going to put on my gym shorts and whatever else, you know, my running shorts, and put on this costume and put on that identity for a little while, and kind of take advantage of that, the belief of self-efficacy as sort of a temporary belief or an alief or whatever, just like a pretend belief, to some extent, and leverage that to tap into that power. And then you're not overestimating yourself, really, because you're going to take that off again and go back to kind of being, you know, your default, and to understand your limitations and understand where your pitfalls are, and and whatnot. So you're kind of tapping into that, the power of that identity to make you believe what you're capable of. And I think, you know, placebo magic, in particular, like ritual and imagination, are really powerful tools to be able to do this, where you can use ritual, for instance, to sort of communicate with alternate versions of yourself. Like, you may remember my talking about this way back in the Parallel Universes episode, which I think was called Yourself into the U-verse, riffing on Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse. But, you know, this idea that you can kind of like visualize and talk to and make space for your alternate selves that are, you know, on the one hand, you can commune with your alternate selves who are like aspirational selves who are just a little bit more capable, a little bit more responsible or disciplined or happy or self-caring or what have you than your current self. And just to help you develop that self-efficacy around those particular issues. On the other hand, you can use it to visualize versions of yourself where a few things changed or pushed and pulled at you at different ways and frayed your at yourself, and you became a bit of a villain or a bit of a victim because of these like stresses. And you can kind of use those types of visualizations and communications to help to anticipate possible problems and to kind of build resilience and to be realistic about like the fact that even if you're growing a little bit every day, you're going to have setbacks, and you want to, rather than pretend that's not going to happen, you're going to want to like anticipate those and be ready to handle them and like, you know, kind of have a plan for those. And some of those setbacks are going to be things that pull at your ability to kind of muster willpower, either willpower to kind of get stuff done or take care of yourself, or willpower to be nice to the people in your life. And so you gotta think ahead and know like, oh, I do have the potential to become a supervillain toward my loved ones. You know, maybe it's just as simple as like anger. And I just like, I know that I have the potential to be hangry. And so I'm going to plan ahead and eat and not be, you know, not let myself get to that point. You know, one thing you can do is actually use literal costuming elements to kind of like just push and pull your identity a little bit throughout the day. Some of these obviously have practical purposes anyway, like, you know, putting on your running shoes is not just a costume. It's also a practical, you know, clothing to wear when you're running. But you can kind of think of this as like an enchanted armor an enchanted item that sort of transforms you into that class of role-playing game character. Now you've like become like the runner class, or you put on your reading glasses and now you've become like the academic, like the wizard class or whatever you want to call it. You can kind of use some of these, and just like basically all you really need to change is like when you put it on, just kind of tell yourself like, now I am this. And that's going to do a couple different things. One is it's going to kind of help you to believe that you are that thing while you're doing, you know, whatever activity. And then it's also going to, I think, help you to increase your flexibility about your sense of identity, so that you, in the long run, if you're, you know, routinely kind of pushing and pulling your sense of identity and changing it and tweaking it to suit the circumstances, I think that in general, you're going to have this stronger belief of like a growth mindset and understanding that you're not fixed and set in stone. You know, that you have the opportunity to change. And I also think that if you there's an element of fake it till you make it, where if you pretend that you're like an athletic person, or pretend that you're a musician, or you pretend that you're an artist, and you put on your little beret or your artist smock or whatever, if that pretending gives you the, you know, kind of opens up the door to actually put the effort into learning these things and developing yourself, then you have the sort of actual more concrete evidence of seeing that you are capable of developing in those areas, that you know, you're not fixed in one place, and that, you know, that self-fulfilling prophecy of saying, well, I'm bad at art, therefore I'm not going to put any effort into art, therefore I'm going to stay bad at art. You know, you can kind of break that vicious cycle using this kind of cheat code of just like fake it till you make it, pretending to be you know, role-playing a slightly different version of yourself and then building that evidence. At some point, you're no longer pretending to be an artist. You're just an artist. You know what I mean? At some point, you're no longer pretending to be a runner. You're just a runner. So I think that, you know, whether you do that through costuming or just through kind of verbal, you know, verbal affirmations or, you know, verbal spellcraft or visualizations where you visualize yourself in a somewhat different costume and have a somewhat different air about you. And any of those things can help. You know, if you're having trouble seeing yourself as being a certain type of identity, you can also use external tools to help. So this book that I'm reading right now, it's called Super Better by Jane McGonigal. And it's kind of about like gamifying self-care, in particular, like post-traumatic growth. But just kind of it's also just works for self-care in general. And it's kind of got like a video game sort of metaphor. Anyway, she talks a lot about this idea of self-efficacy and how it's the belief that you have the power to accomplish things and change things in your life. And that self-efficacy is not just like a general trait. It's specific to certain domains. So you might have a lot of self-efficacy around academics, but not a lot of self-efficacy around fitness. Or you might have, you know, really high self-efficacy around relationships, but have really poor self-efficacy around creativity. You know, one example she talked about in there was it was like a scientific study where they showed that people who played a fitness video game where their avatar looked just like them, but every time they did a rep, like, you know, I think it was kind of along the lines of like We Fit or something, where you're doing actual exercises while your character on the screen is doing the exercises. And it's like every time they did one rep, their on-screen avatar would shed a little bit of fat and gain some muscle, like every single rep. You could visibly see that. And if I remember right, the distinction was like the control group or one of the other groups, like their avatar didn't look like them. It just looked like somebody else. And seeing yourself, you know, shed fat and gain muscle like every single rep increased people's self-efficacy around fitness in particular, more so than the groups that where their avatar didn't look like them. So she kind of had tied that scientific study to an example where this is just an anecdotal thing that somebody had told her about how they had created an avatar in The Sims that looked just like them, and that ended up increasing their self-efficacy because they made their Sim do the things that they would like to be able to do in real life that they didn't feel like they had the capability of doing, and that seeing somebody who looked just like them accomplish these different things actually increase their self-efficacy and believing that they could juggle, you know, a relationship and a career. And I don't know, I forget what the details were, but so you can use tricks like that, you know, the Sims, or you could use Animal Crossing, or use any kind of things like action figures. I don't know, but you could use these kind of tools to create representations of it if visualizing is too difficult. Or you don't want to kind of go to the trouble of making a costume or something, you can just any tool that's available to kind of help you to be able to visualize it. You don't have to necessarily rely on your mental imaging capabilities. You can actually put together a more concrete representation. And then, you know, if you can screenshot it or print it out or what have you, so that you have something on display where you can see yourself represented as, oh, I have the potential to be this thing. It's kind of like what that thing they talk about when it comes to representation in media, like in superhero movies or whatever, that you can't be what you can't see. You want to be able to see yourself as heroic in whatever specific endeavor you're trying to develop yourself in. So, I think just to boil this down again, I think first of all, you don't want to be too fixated on any identity, whether that's positive or negative. You want to kind of, rather than see it as something that's attached to you permanently, see it as something that is like a piece of clothing that you can put on or take off. And you want to, throughout the course of a day, be kind of shifting identities a little bit here and there, and be conscious of how your identities are shifting as you move between different contexts and different groups of people and whatnot. And think about what kind of identity is going to be the most helpful in a given situation, either to, you know, to give you the self-efficacy that I can do this, or to give you the self-awareness that I have the capability of falling into these pitfalls. Yeah, just in general, you know, rather than say I am this, I am not that, I cannot do this, just shift all of those into an I can or I could context. I could be this, I could be that, I could be capable of this, I could be capable of that, good and bad, you know. So let me know what kind of rituals or tools or framework, mental frameworks, or just anything that you use to help you kind of negotiate this complex issue of identity. And I know I've heard from people on the Discord server who have like kind of spirits or imaginary friends or whatever kind of term you want to use, like helpers that they commune with who are aspirational versions of themselves. I do something similar to that, where I have my kind of wizard identity, Durmok, which is sort of an aspirational identity. And then I also have some imaginary friend mentor type characters who are also kind of representations of who I would like to be. They're just a little more separate from my sense of self. They're you know, different. I can conceptualize them as different people, but people who are representative of where I'd like to go, you know, in terms of identity. So yeah, let me know what kind of tools and tricks and spells and rituals you like to use to negotiate this, and what other thoughts you have. And I hope this episode helps you to kind of, you know, cultivate a positive identity that also is, you know, realistic about where you're at.
You can find the Placebo Magic Podcast and my poetry and other writing on the web at farmcodegary.com. Send your feedback to farmcodegary@protonmail.com and let me know if I can read your feedback on the show. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of incompetech.com and licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. You can support the show by giving us a review on your podcast app of choice, sharing an episode with a friend, or becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/placebomagic. Patreon supporters also gain access to our Patreon-exclusive bonus show. Remember, magic is a metaphor, and metaphor is magical.